Robert, let's talk about private space for a moment. Did you think the X Prize would be given out this soon?
Oh, I said so on this show twice.
Yeah.
Early in the year, I said I had no doubt that before the year was out, someone was going to win it. I thought that at the time in June.
When you were on with Barbara.
Yes, I said it then that Spaceship One was the leader. There were other competitors that are still in the running to do this, by the way, putting astronauts in
space.
No,
but I mean years ago when they were talking about the X Prize.
I had no doubt that sooner or later the private X Prize was going to step to the plate and make this happen.
Okay.
There have been many obstacles in the way. The X Prize was a brilliant idea by Pete DeMandis and several others to jumpstart it. But you have to give credit also to people like Paul Allen. You know, you could actually say that the reason this finally happened was because the innovation of software and computers, because that innovation provided the venture capital for Allen to finance Burt Rutan, who had the engineering knowledge to build Spaceship One. And there we have it.
I mean, is it?
You could say the same thing. There's another company right now that just shipping to out to launch site in L.A., a company called SpaceX, that's owned by a guy named Elon Musk who invented PayPal. And he, at 28, sold PayPal for like $1.5 billion to eBay. And he's taken that money to build a space company. He wants to take the market share of the rocket industry from Boeing, Lockheed, and the Russians. And he's going to do it. I have no doubt about it. So you could say computers, which was an American innovation, is bringing space back to America as well.
Do you think that will be the next major industry to invest in for people?
It's an interesting question. Very possibly. It really comes down to several things that are still in the way. First of all, you know, they've won the X Prize, but, you know, they still haven't flown passengers. And I suspect that they're not 100% sure they're ready. That doesn't mean they're not very close, but that doesn't mean they're not close, but
mm-hmm.
they're still probably doing tests. There is no question that with Richard Branson's money coming in from Virgin Airways, there's plenty of money now to do the proper finalized research and engineering to make this a viable craft. And the customers are banging down the doors. They're being overwhelmed by millions of hits on their webpage for tickets. Their people have showed up at the door with cash, with checks. So there's no question they've got the customers. There is another obstacle involved, and that has to do with the government, which doesn't like the competition because they control space right now. And they've already been, the Congress, House of Representatives passed a bill last week, like 400 plus to one or two, basically allowing suborbital tourist flights to go forward, to limit the liabilities for the companies,
mm-hmm.
to tell people, you know, you're taking the risk, you have to accept the risk, you shouldn't be able to sue them afterward if something goes wrong.
Right.
The Senate, though, got bogged down and didn't pass the bill, so it's not going anywhere. Right,
well, who's
going
to regulate all this, though, Robert? In that we can't have rocket ships taking off all over the place.
That might be so, but you know, at the same time, I kind of, for example, Spaceship One is not a tremendously dangerous craft to worry about. It's a plane. It takes off like a plane. Once it's in orbit, it comes up in suborbital elevations. It comes back like a plane. It's a very controlled landing, just like the shuttles. You know, the shuttles are like a brick, and that was the famous line of the first astronaut who flew Enterprise when it was being tested. It's like landing a brick, but it lands. It actually, the lifting body technology you're talking about is extremely robust. It works. It brings the craft down very precisely in the right place. Even when it breaks up, as Columbia did, tragic as that is,
mm-hmm.
the fears that millions would die wasn't, it fell, broke apart right over the United States, scattered debris everywhere, and there was no damage of any kind, really. Then that doesn't mean you take this nonchalantly, but at the same time, to regulate it too much is going to choke it off. To be afraid of the possibilities that could go wrong will prevent us from achieving the possibilities that can go right.
Well, I'm talking about, though, the day when we have 1,000 of these going up every day.
Well, that's far down the future. We need to, you don't get into, you know, the airline industry is a great example of that. They didn't start to deal with that kind of regulation until the airline industry was almost 30 years old and was beginning to have regular scheduled commercial flights in about the just about the time of World War II. They didn't really start to regulate it seriously until then. Up until then, everyone understood you pay top dollar to do this, you're taking a risk, but, you know, if you want to take that risk, it's worth it if you've got the money. And no one questioned it, and everyone was willing to live with that risk. It's a free country. The concept was, you know, we'll all live with the risk because it's progress, it's moving forward, it's achieving great things. And we have to take the same attitude here, unless we're not going to get it, we're not going to get anything done. And to try to regulate it at this stage of the game is going to choke it off. And unfortunately, not only has Congress not moved, but there have been FAA officials who've already said, well, you know, we've got to protect the what they call the uninvolved public, which is just me and you who aren't on the plane, aren't on the ship. Well, you know, I don't want them to protect me. I'm willing to live with the risk, too, because I want to see the achievement occur. And I wish they would keep their noses out of it. You know, they're not doing, accomplishing anything but squelching it.
Do you think airline travel will be this way, where a rocket is launched from L.A., goes up there, and in 30 minutes is landing back in New York? I mean,
yes.
Is that possible?
Oh, without question. I mean, there's no doubt. Once you, you know, Spaceship One itself, just what it is in a sense the SST, because it gets several Mach. It gets up to 5,000 miles per hour. That's multi-Mach. It's like 10 Mach. And so it already can be the national space plane that Reagan proposed back in the 80s that never got built, though they spent billions in the black hole of Washington.
Right.
And never did anything. And for $20 million, they basically built it. They only can take two passengers, but, you know, Richard Branson's willing to turn it into a real airline. He's willing to invest the money. And so, you know, it's once again, there's a possibility, but you can't squelch it in the beginning. And I have no doubt that, you know, once they start selling tickets and start having a profit, the people who built this don't do it just simply for the profit. In fact, that's probably not their, that's not their top reason. It's a reason, but it's not the top reason. They do it because they want to do it. So they get extra, start making a profit. They'll funnel that money right back into the business to build bigger and better. And they could easily get to the moon faster than the government can, once they have the impetus and the profit.
A guy could commute to work between L.A. and New York faster than what it would take him to take a subway when he lives in just New York.
That's right.
That's amazing.
Very possible, yes.
Absolutely amazing.